Fantastic. Okay, good afternoon, everybody. My name's Aura Miller. I'm the director of the IWRA. Delighted to welcome you all here this afternoon to our virtual session. For those of you who don't know the IWRA, and there may be a few people out there who don't, we are Wales's leading independent think tank with a long track record of shaping policy and debates and influencing change in Wales through our policy research, advocacy, online and print publications, which provide platforms for robust comment and debate and our agenda setting events. We're a membership organisation with members across the country and far further afield. We're funded by our members, the events we run ourselves and independent trusts and foundations. This is our 10th Rethinking Wales panel discussion, and we'd very much like to thank the Carnegie UK Trust for supporting us in this chunk of the series. A little bit of housekeeping first. As this is a webinar on Zoom, participants are muted by the host, and we're going to use the Q&A section for questions, please. If you'd like to direct your question to a particular speaker, please do state their name. We really encourage you to engage with each other in the chat. We've already sent around a list of participants already, so you should know who's signed up also to attend. Please remember that all chats and questions are recorded and the whole session is being recorded. We'll be keeping the event strictly to an hour to avoid Zoom overload, but we'll be keeping the chat room open for 15 minutes after the end of the session in case anybody wants to carry on the conversation, because we know how difficult it is to meet up in person. For those of you who haven't joined us before, we started this series of Rethinking Wales discussions to shine a light on what matters most to people now as our reality continues to change and because we're still not able to meet up in person. Today, we're focusing on business and the ongoing impact that COVID is having on businesses large and small in communities right across Wales. However, I would like to remind you that there are lots of non-business people watching and listening today, so we'll be aiming to make sure that the discussion is as accessible to everyone as possible, and we'd really like to encourage questions about the links between business and other sectors too. We're interested in exploring the immediate impact of COVID and what has been both more and less effective in the Welsh Government's support for businesses during the crisis. We're interested in whether clearer long-term trends are starting to emerge and what the Welsh Government can do to help businesses respond and adapt to them. There's early evidence from today's Resolution Foundation report that employment levels in Wales have proven more resilient than in previous recessions in the 1980s and 1990s. But COVID-19 threatens to expose key vulnerabilities around low pay, as well as competition from online retail. And we're interested in how businesses in Wales can thrive in a post-COVID world, and we must think of that, and post-Brexit global economy, whilst ensuring that the way we do business in Wales also contributes to well-being, strong communities, and a flourishing foundational economy. One key tool that we hope many businesses and communities will be using to help them think through what might work is understanding Welsh places, something that we've built with a number of partners, bringing together publicly available data about places with more than 1,000 residents in them, helping people understand how independent, interdependent, or dependent their place is, and crucially, why. We'll be launching the next phase of UWP later this year, so please keep a lookout for that. We'll hear from our panellists in a moment, but we also want to hear from you in the chat room today and on Twitter using the hashtag Rethinking Wales. For those of you who have attended a Rethinking Wales event before, today's session is a little bit different. We're delighted to be joined by Ken Skates, member of the Senate for Clwyd South and Minister for Economy, Transport and North Wales, who'll be giving a keynote speech before answering questions put forward by our panellists. Scrutiny is of the utmost importance to the IWRA. Also joining us is Chris Knott, founder and senior partner at Capital Law, deputy chair of the Economy Ministerial Advisory Board, a former Prince of Wales Business Ambassador for Wales and chair of the Welsh Government's Financial and Professional Services Sector Panel. Chris is vice chair of Ken Skates' Ministerial Advisory Board. In response to the COVID-19 crisis, Chris was asked by the minister to establish FENEX, an ad hoc advisory group which brings together a cross-section of senior representatives from the business community to provide independent advice about the shape that the COVID-19 recovery might take and what policies the government should consider implementing. FENEX is keen to engage more widely, particularly from real business people running real businesses across Wales, and today's event is part of that engagement. As the IWRA, and in our role bridging sectors, trades and interest groups, we've worked with colleagues from across the political spectrum to pull together a panel that can comment on how Welsh Government's decisions and communications so far have played out on the ground. And we're looking forward to some constructive feedback on where policy should focus in the 6 months between now and the May 2021 election, particularly as the twin crisis of Brexit starts to bite. As Wales emerges from its autumn fire break in 4 days' time, and as England goes into its second lockdown and our day-to-day reality changes yet again, whether you're a resident or a business person along the border or elsewhere in Wales, what will these new changes mean for you? We want to hear from you in the chat room. What questions do you have for the Minister? I'm very pleased to introduce today's panellists who will be quizzing the Minister on the Welsh Government's approach. We've got a fairly big panel today of six other contributors: Charles Dark, Adrian Emmett, Amina Redzepovich, James Wilson, Sally Stevenson, which means I'll be chairing tightly so that we keep to time. We only have an hour. Charles Dark's original career was in marketing and advertising, firstly with Times newspapers and then with McCann Erickson, working on international clients such as General Motors, Gillette and Heineken. He then moved into the film world, producing TV commercials all over the world and developing screenplays with the BBC. In 1998, you and your wife now run the Wednesday Hotel in Huntleigh. He declares himself a proud member of the Awkward Squad, so we are sure to get some good questions. Welcome, Charles. Adrian Emmett is the landlord of the Lion Pub in Treorchy. Adrian's a community-minded local entrepreneur and landlord. He's had over 25 years experience in the hospitality industry, working all over the UK. 9 years ago, he returned home to Wales and now operates two previously boarded up pubs in Treorchy, employing over 40 local staff. Adrian chairs the local Pub Watch and Chamber of Trade, growing its membership to 120 members in just a few years. He secured grant funding for the town, launched the Visit Treorchy concept, and was a key figure in establishing Treorchy's Business Improvement District. This year, Treorchy has been crowned the champion high street of Great Britain and Adrian its high street hero. Welcome back, Adrian. Amina Redzepovich is a freelance PR and communications specialist based in Cardiff with over 15 years experience. She went freelance in 2017 after gaining skills and experience in many sectors, including health, education, environmental issues and homelessness. Welcome, Amina. James Wilson is the director of Deep Dock Limited. He's been involved in the extensive culture of mussels in Wales and the Menai Strait and Northern Ireland for the past 2 decades. During this period, Deep Dock has been an active industrial partner in multiple collaborative research projects with Welsh and European universities. A marine scientist with further degrees in fisheries, economics and law, James has previously worked for the National Federation of Fishermen's Organisations and for similar representative organisations and government bodies elsewhere. Over the years, he's been a board member of Seafish, the Food and Drink Industry Board Wales, and a member of the Welsh Food Advisory Committee of the Food Standards Agency. Welcome to you, James. Lastly, we have Sally Stevenson. Warm welcome to you, Sally. She owns and runs the Pencil Case, an award-winning stationery and local school uniform shop in Cowbridge in the Vale of Glamorgan, which gives her first-hand experience of day-to-day challenges of the significant impact of COVID and Brexit on her business. When the government announced the potentially devastating increases to business rates in October 2016, Sally successfully instigated and led the high-profile campaign to persuade the Welsh Government to implement a multi-million pound package of financial support to protect Welsh high streets and small businesses. This inspired her to get actively involved in politics, and she's now the Welsh Lib Dems candidate for the Vale of Glamorgan for the 2021 elections. We're going to have a great set of questions, no doubt, from all our panellists. To kick us off, though, I'd like to introduce the Minister. Minister, croeso.
Well, thank you, Oriel. It's an absolute pleasure to be able to join you today. My thanks not just to the IWA for arranging this, but also to the panellists with whom I'll be answering questions and entering into discussion. And thanks, obviously, to everybody who has zoomed into this event. Hopefully, we'll be able to have a good, candid discussion about the future shape of the Welsh economy. And of course, this event was scheduled to follow my planned statement on the economic recovery and reconstruction in the Senate. That was scheduled for Tuesday, but unfortunately, it had to be postponed to make way for urgent matters regarding the firebreak and new restrictions that we'll be living with from November the 9th. So instead, the statement will take place later this month. But I hope that we'll still be able to have a good discussion on ways that Wales can recover from the impact of the pandemic. And even though I'm yet to formally publish details of our mission, I'll share with you as much of my thoughts as possible. And from the outset, I just want to put on record my thanks to Chris Knott for the incredible work that he and Fenix have done in helping to shape our future approach to the economy, which will be outlined in that statement. And our long-term goal is a resilient economy, which has the well-being of people and the environment at its heart, a Wales of well-being. Now, the COVID-19 crisis and the end of the EU transition period provide an opportunity and, yes, a necessity to consider what sort of economy is needed in Wales, responding to the changed circumstances, new working environment, and the future of work itself. And improving the well-being of everyone in Wales is the mission which drives this government's approach to the economy. We need to reconstruct the economy out of the pandemic with the fundamental goal of achieving sustainable well-being with dignity and fairness for people, not just building wealth, but creating wealth for a greater purpose. Combating the virus and mitigating the further damage of a no-deal exit from the European Union obviously remain our key objectives as a government, but we also have an unequaled opportunity as well to look to the future, to tackle with renewed vigour many of the deep-seated challenges that Wales faces, and to help our people, our businesses, our communities recover and prosper. So in terms of the impact and the response so far from Welsh Government, over the next 12 months, as you outlined, Oriel, with the assistance of the Resolution Foundation's analysis, we can safely say that unemployment, underemployment, economic inactivity will grow in Wales and across the UK quite considerably, accompanied by more adverse impacts on young people, on people from BAME backgrounds, older workers, disabled people, and those with health conditions, as well as, of course, those in low-skilled occupations. And already we've seen the largest fall in UK GDP on record. Businesses are experiencing disruptions to cash flow, supply chains, labour supply and demand for their goods and services. The latest trade data in Wales shows a substantial fall in goods exports as well, of almost 40% compared to the same quarter last year. And labour market data for July, the lowest point, shows that the number of paid employees in Wales had fallen by almost 30,000 since before the pandemic started in February. Although that said, obviously, the number of paid employees did increase slightly in August and in September. But recent data also shows an uptake in universal credit claims in Wales and a fall in the average number of hours worked. Our concern, though, is that the scarring effects on the economy of a protracted recession could run deep indeed, and particularly for certain groups of people. As previous downturns have demonstrated, those that are disadvantaged in the labour market tend to be the people that suffer the most. And as I've already said, they tend to be young people entering the labour market, people with low skills, low qualifications, those with poor health and disabilities, and those at risk from discrimination, such as minority groups. So we've responded as a government at pace and with vigour to minimise the impacts on businesses through the last 2 weeks of the firebreak and renewed lockdown into the late autumn and winter with a series of mitigation measures and clear principles for behavioural change that we all as citizens in Wales should abide with without exception. In the last few months, the Welsh Government has committed to a £2.4 billion business support package for Welsh businesses, which includes our £500 million Economic Resilience Fund, which has supported thousands and thousands of Welsh firms, protecting more than 100,000 jobs that might otherwise have been lost. And crucially, those jobs are protected for at least a year. We've also provided a £40 million jobs and skills package, which has been designed to support anyone who needs help to find work, education or training, or indeed to start their own business. And we've also provided funding to support essential services. For example, we've provided an extra £40 million for adult social care services during the pandemic. And in particular, that's helped meet the increased cost of PPE, food, staffing costs and ICT, which are incurred by adult social services. We've also made available an additional £5 million to provide additional mental health support for children who are experiencing increased stress or anxiety as a result of the pandemic. And more than 800 people have been housed since the lockdown began. Many of these people were previously forced to sleep on our streets or were part of what we call the hidden homeless, living precariously as sofa service surfers or in unsuitable temporary accommodation. But we recognise that some of these measures may not be enough for businesses over this difficult period. As such, we've provided a variety of other support systems to help businesses. We'll continue to prioritise those things that matter most to the people of Wales, and we'll do everything in our power to ensure that we provide a socially, economically and environmentally just recovery that benefits all the people of Wales through targeted investment and support now and into the future. And as you've already said, Oriel, the impact of the pandemic combined with exiting the EU threatened to reverse the progress that we made in reducing unemployment in Wales, in reducing the number of people who are economically inactive, in promoting business growth to the highest level that it has been at since devolution. And in turn, these cumulative impacts threaten the fabric of our communities as well. You talked about place. Well, it is places that stand to be hit hard, you know, urban and rural. And indirectly, there are those things that are at risk that we value much as a nation, such as the vibrancy of our Welsh-speaking communities. And so to our thinking on the economic recovery and reconstruction. The reconstruction of the economy will not be a return to business as usual, I can assure you to that. The world has permanently changed. The response to the pandemic has accelerated many structural trends in automation, decarbonisation and the impact of an ageing population that were evident before the crisis. And these changes are going to have profound implications for the future of work, for communities and for our well-being. COVID-19 has impacted the economy and the labour market in an unprecedented degree, bringing significant disruption and also leading to sharp falls in the number of people employed, the number of hours worked, and the number of job vacancies on offer. So whilst COVID-19 has come sudden and at huge cost, we've also seen people and communities coming together and organising in ways that we've not seen in living memory. It continues to be an incredibly challenging time, yes, for businesses across Wales with a difficult winter ahead. But I think we've seen golden examples where businesses have repurposed and adapted themselves to take better advantage of technology and also to supply new markets. So we've published COVID-19 Reconstruction Challenges and Priorities. That was back in early October, the work that was led by the Council General, my friend and colleague, Jeremy Miles. And that set out 8 priority areas where we should focus our efforts and also our resources for reconstruction to make the most positive impacts that we can for Wales. They include 5 areas which align with the discussions I've had in my portfolio on recovery priorities. Number 1, reduce unemployment and give everyone the best chance to find and keep decent work with long-term prospects. Provide opportunities for people to develop their skills and to acquire new ones. Secondly, construction of council and social housing, investing in low carbon housing at scale, and upgrading housing to make it more energy efficient and to reduce fuel poverty. The third area of concern is investment in our local town centres and the creation of more remote working hubs. Essentially, we want to have a sharper focus on building places. The fourth is the response, an energetic response to the climate emergency by pursuing a strong decarbonisation agenda. And you know, you'll know that within the Economic Action Plan, it already existed. It was within the economic contract. It was one of the 5 calls to action. Decarbonisation will become an even more prominent feature of our economic policy through the recovery. And then fifth, the focus on everyday foundational economy businesses and the support for independent Welsh headquartered businesses. So our vision is of a well-being economy which drives prosperity, is environmentally sound and helps everyone realise their potential. Our economic well-being is without a shadow of a doubt tied to our environment, cultural and social well-being. And this vision is rooted in our existing economic action plan, as I've already said. It's a progressive purpose. It's a progressive purpose in reducing inequality and spreading wealth and well-being across all of Wales. And a prosperous economy requires a steady focus on resilience with a capacity for transformation. We'll take action to support a diverse yet interrelated economic base to outlook in firms with positive innovation and performance, good productivity levels, and a workforce equipped with the skills for a changing world. And a green economy demands high levels of circularity where resources are kept in use, adding economic value, and where waste is obviously avoided. An equal economy means investing in the productive potential of all people right across all of our communities, and we'll build ambition, encourage learning for life, and support people to make the most of their potential. Our regional approach, which is a relatively new approach, it came with the Economic Action Plan, so it's only 2 years old. Our regional approach will support a fair distribution of opportunities, and we'll continue to demand and champion fair work. And what's really worth noting is that the Resolution Foundation report today found that in spite of a lot of politicians in Westminster talking about levelling up, here in Wales, we have been levelling up. Geographical inequality within Wales has shrunk in recent years because of our new regional approach. So in closing, there's been significant engagement over how the Welsh Government should respond to the impact of the pandemic. And as I've said, I'm extremely grateful to everyone who's contributed. Chris Knott, Deputy Chair of the Ministerial Advisory Board, has been generating and coordinating views, and they've been crucially important in shaping our priorities. We can and will recover. We've developed the most effective blueprint for us all to build up from together to transition to a more compassionate and benign future. And Wales has a strong economy. We have a strong economy, and we have first-rate enterprises, industries with many skilled and brilliant people, and all will contribute fruitfully to our reconstruction, collectively and individually. Oriel, thank you.
Classic. There we are. Unmuted myself. Thank you very much indeed, Minister, for that that opener. Chris, I'm going to come to you because the Minister was just talking about engagement, and that's what Fenix was set up to do. Can you explain to us why yet another advisory group is needed? What's the difference between this and the Ministerial Advisory Group, please?
Thank you very much for the opportunity to speak to you today, because this session is kind of part of the purpose, really. Firstly, the Ministerial Advisory Board was set up by the Minister about 3 years ago and comprises 10 people in Wales from outside of government who meet regularly to give an outside of government perspective on government policy, economic policy, transport policy, and the like. Some are from the private sector, some are from the third sector, some are from academia. When the pandemic hit, the Minister asked me, is both as the vice chair and being very firmly from the private sector, whether what I could do is reach out to a wider community on behalf of the Ministerial Advisory Board, reach out and for this reason, which is that whilst there was a terrific immediate response from government and from others, such as in creating the Economic Resilience Fund and dealing with the immediate concerns of the pandemic, clearly we were going into a recession. Clearly there was going to be a need to have an economic recovery. And what the minister wanted to do was to give the people in Wales a voice. But what was happening was that opinion was coming in from everywhere. I mean, it was coming in thick and fast, well-meaning, well-informed, but very difficult to digest. And part of the brief was to try and act as a filter for this breadth of opinion. The group that we pulled together, who named themselves Fenix, which is Welsh for Phoenix, are from across the length and breadth of Wales. They're the heads of the various business representative groups, representatives from the TUC, Welsh Cooperative Centre, the chairmen of the Transport for Wales, Development Bank, Airport. This was created outside of government so that it could move extremely quickly in quite a private sector way. In July, it met on several occasions to give the minister a very initial high-level view as to what the private sector went. Because, of course, all the members of the group were both reaching out into their networks and their own communities, as well as trying to filter what other groups were saying. And the most extraordinary thing about it was the unanimity there was amongst the group. Chairing it, I thought that my job was going to be trying to balance left and right, hawk and dove, but it wasn't. There was a unanimity, and a lot of what they did, I can hear reflected in what the minister's been saying, because their first viewpoint was never waste a good crisis. There's been a direction of travel in Wales for some time towards a new Wales, a new economic Wales, but the pandemic busted a lot of things, which gave an opportunity to get that rebuilding done much more quickly. So, for example, the pandemic has busted the myth that working from home is skiving. I'm at home. Many of you are probably all at home in one way or another. The minister's definitely not at home because he's got a tie on. It busted that myth. It busted many myths. And so there was an opportunity to do an economic reconstruction much more quickly than otherwise would be possible. And the second thing that they united around was a vision for Wales based on wellness, based on the people of Wales and wellness. GVA being important, and GVA being part of the factors that one takes into account in measuring wellness, but not being the target. And again, that was a unanimous view from people who are at the very sharp end of capitalism, if I could put it that way. Some of them are. Later on, towards the end of September, the minister and officials asked if Fenix could work again to sharpen its focus, rather than go high level as it did in July, and come up with some more specific ideas for implementing the broader idea. Because the broader ideas originally were based around people, place, green and digital, which coincidentally mirrored the direction of travel of the cabinet at that time, as we subsequently learned. Those would be the big four focuses. In its more sharper advice, one of the points it made was, don't do things to people. involve people across Wales in shaping, you know, what this new economic policy would be in detail, and reach out in, and that's why I started by saying this session is an important part of doing that. This advice was warmly received. And think of implementing the recovery in terms of the four levers, of the economic levers that government has. One is to build confidence and to influence and to connect. Infrastructure, financing, and skills development.
Chris, thank you. I'm going to stop you there because I want to hear from people who are at the sharp end. We can come back and draw on any other questions afterwards, and perhaps you might be able to stay at the end for a bit more chat. Charles, I'd like to come to you first, please, give you a minute to unmute yourself. I know you've got a couple of questions, one around the Emergency Resilience Fund and also around tourism, because we know obviously that hospitality is one of the sectors particularly hard hit. Over to you, Charles. What questions do you have for the Minister?
Well, thank you. Some of my questions have sort of in part been answered by Chris Knott and slightly less from Ken Skates. I think that what I'm picking up on is saying that this look to reach out and find out what's actually happening on the ground. The thing about tourism in Wales is it's fundamentally made up of thousands of independent, often family-run businesses. And these are people like ourselves who have got first-hand experience of dealing with problems, dealing with the public. And I don't think that he says there's a consultation. We haven't seen any of that consultation. We haven't seen any of that consultation on how to handle hygiene and safety within a hotel environment or within a pub environment. We had an absurd situation at the beginning of October when it's announced don't travel in Wales. We had the editor of The Guardian due to join us that weekend for a write-up. He cancelled. Oh, we're not supposed to travel in Wales. I'm from London. And then all our bookings disappeared. We were looking at a very healthy October. Everything went that day. And then 2 weeks later, oh, no, it's fine to come to Wales so long as you're coming from an area that's not under restriction. But we, probably every decent hotel in Wales, was already applying that regulation. We weren't accepting anyone from Caerphilly or Burnley or anywhere that was in difficulty. And I think that's an area of communication which is really, really failing. I'm delighted that there's an idea of trying to reach down and to dealing with people. There's an awful lot of people who can come up with all sorts of creative, innovative solutions to problems. And in actual fact, I mean, we're going to keep this very, very short. So I'm going to invitation, particularly to Ken Skates, because I think you probably travel up and down the A470 quite often. Well, why don't you pull off come over to my Huntleth, come to the Wednesday, you can talk to me, talk to the staff, I'll bring in one or two other local business people, and we can take some of these discussions a little bit further.
Thank you, Charles. I think your key point around communications, I want to ask you, what would you like to see from Welsh Government then in terms of comms improving?
Well, I think there's an initiative there with Fenix, but I'm learning about Fenix now. I haven't heard anything about it. I don't quite know the solution, but I think an engagement more somehow or other on some sort of local level with people actually at the coalface.
Okay, because I do know that there is an email, which is economicpolicy@gov.wales, which is open for ideas and suggestions, but that's a dumping ground or a place where things, a repository more than a dumping ground, a repository for ideas and suggestions. That's not a two-way engagement, isn't it? It's not a listening two-way engagement exercise. Really. Yeah. Minister, can I come to you, please?
Yeah, I think it's worth reflecting on the importance of industry groups as well, representative bodies. So, you know, just as an example, even though I'm the economy minister, I'm not the culture, sport and tourism minister, I do nonetheless, in my capacity as a member of the Senedd, have discussions with organisations such as the Association of Wedding Venues. So the discussions take place at a ministerial level with those sort of representative bodies, obviously engaging with directly with 267,000 businesses in Wales would be exhausting, which is why it's essential that we engage with those bodies that represent the 267,000 businesses, and why I felt that the work that Chris Knott has been leading on was so very important, because we don't necessarily have as a government, as officials, the sort of reach and the networks that are available within the business community for discussions to take place. But, you know, when I can get to McCuntleth and visit the Wednesday, I'd be delighted to do that, because certainly I find that discussing issues directly with business owners sometimes produces some of the most creative solutions to the problems that we face. So yeah, certainly when I'm able to do that, it'd be a pleasure. I'll come and have maybe a pint and dinner.
Well, absolutely. And I mean, Chris Knott, I mean, the invitation is very much open to you as well.
Thank you. I'm in McCuntleth next Thursday. I'll call in and see.
Okay. Give me a time. I'll make sure I'm here.
Okay, brilliant. Thank you. I guess, Minister, there's an issue there, isn't there, around cabinet coordination around priorities, because obviously there are ministerial portfolios, but yeah. One of the challenges we continue to see is that sense of cabinet responsibility and collective responsibility for those sorts of challenges and how those get shared. So what would be good to hear is a little bit about the decision-making around things which may fall into different ministerial portfolios, but people and businesses don't experience life because of where the funding comes from or because of where which minister is responsible for it. So I mean, what's going on there to improve things?
This is incredibly complicated. This is like kind of opening up and looking at the wiring of government, how government operates. It's often been said that departments, ministers can sometimes operate in too much of a siloed fashion, that some ministers can sometimes suffer from what's called departmentalitis. I can assure you that that doesn't happen in the Welsh government, because A, we're a tiny government. You know, we've got a fraction of the number of ministers that exist in other governments, and you can't avoid engaging with your colleagues as a result of that. Secondly, we have a strong coordinating function as well within the government. And so Jeremy led on the work right across all departments on the priorities for reconstruction and recovery, from which then each of the ministers were able to take those priorities and make sure that what they did was aligned with everyone else's work. And so having that central coordinating function is vitally important. And of course, we also have cross-government policy boards as well. So as an example, if I'm discussing the visitor economy placemaking, I'll be joined by David Ellis-Thomas, who has a crucially important role in that regard, who as a representative of sport, culture, the visitor economy. And so it does happen. I think it's much more effective in small governments as well, cross-government joined up working, rather than in major national governments. You know, in the UK government, there are more than 100 ministers, I think, parliamentary undersecretaries in state and so forth, with departments that don't even exist in the same buildings. So it's far more difficult to create the sort of direct engagement that you need to have to guarantee alignment and also to generate innovation and creativity. Some of the best ideas that I get actually are from officials that come to the challenge with alien eyes. And so I like to draw in officials from outside my department to give advice on how we should proceed in certain areas, you know, whether it be might be in terms of advice from health on how we construct an economic contract that promotes mental health and well-being. You know, there are many opportunities to be able to collaborate within government and not just between government and the outside world.
Can I make my next point?
Absolutely, Charles, go ahead.
The other thing I wanted to make is there is this ERF3 fund, which is wonderful and good. And we have applied for the maximum that we can get because we've got projects that we would like to do for being ready for once this crisis is under control, if you put it that way. My concern is, and I think a number of others, is that there's nothing really between now and then. What's the point of putting £70,000 into a business that might not be here in 6 months' time? And the website, the Business Wales website, actually cites a rural hotel getting £70,000 to keep it alive until next April. But when one looks to apply, you have to, it's, the money can only be spent on something for the future.
Yeah.
You've got to get to that future. And there's nothing at the moment. The furlough scheme is fine. That takes care of the staff. But the business has overheads.
Yeah. So let me just deal with some really important points that you make there, Charles. First and foremost, the Economic Resilience Fund, as part of our wider package, means that we've got the most generous package of support anywhere in the United Kingdom in Wales for businesses. That's an absolute fact. And we recognise that the costs that businesses have to shoulder go way beyond salaries, employment costs, and extend to other fixed costs and overheads that have to be addressed. And that's why we created the Economic Resilience Fund. In the latest phase of the fund, phase three, we have two parts to it. One part of it concerns the lockdown grants for businesses to see them through the short term. The second grant concerns development opportunities to make sure that in the longer term, businesses are able to thrive. As part of the application process, we need to be confident that those businesses are going to be in existence in the future. But it would, I think it would be a dereliction of duty if we were not looking to the longer term whilst also making sure that we support as many businesses as possible through the pandemic. And our strategy for tourism and hospitality has been that when you have lockdowns, help them go into hibernation. Because trying to generate any sort of turnover is impossibly difficult unless they are able to swiftly diversify what they do. And so far, it's proven successful. But I do accept that this is an incredibly traumatic time for people who operate businesses in the tourism and hospitality sector and in many other sectors as well. But I would just finally say, I've been made aware of numerous instances now of abusive behaviour towards the Business Wales helpline staff. And I'm worried that whereas we saw incredible community spirit at the outset of the pandemic, levels of patience and tolerance are evaporating. And, you know, I'm trying to remind people on a very regular basis, we are genuinely in this together and everybody's trying to do the right thing. I'm trying to work as closely as I can with political counterparts at Westminster. They may be in a different party, but at the same time, we are all striving to work together to overcome this.
Well, thank you.
Rowan, Charles, I'm going to move us on because we're going to run out of time, I'm afraid. We're at 22 already. Adrian, I'd like to come to you next. You're operating a different kind of hospitality business yourself. You're playing a role within your wider community in Treorchy. There's a key issue, obviously, for that wider community in the high street, particularly in terms of online shopping and footfall on the high street itself. What's your particular question for the minister, please?
Okay, well, my first question has almost been covered by Charles, so thank you very much for that, Charles. But it does revolve around the ERF Phase 3 business grant. Some of the interventions by Welsh Government have been really welcomed by the business community. So, but sometimes it's the application of the interventions and maybe the communication and the systems and the process which has fallen down a little bit. Now, obviously, the business grant, I was a fan of the lockdown, the fire break. My business dropped from August to October by 80%. So we've really struggled. Something needed to happen. And we put a bit of time into the phase three to the grant. Now, obviously it closed after about 30 hours, 36 hours, when we were under the impression it'd be open for about 3 weeks. Can you give me a bit more give us a bit more detail about what's happening with that, and is it stopped or is it just suspended?
Yeah, thanks, Adrian. Thank you, Adrian. Well, the first thing that I'd say is, you know, we've got 4 more days of lockdown arrangements. England now has 4 weeks because they delayed pulling the trigger on it. And unfortunately, you know, businesses across the border are going to suffer for even longer. What we did was absolutely vital to interrupt the flow of coronavirus, not just to save health services, but also to protect the longer term interests of the economy. And we did that in full knowledge that it would have an impact on businesses, which is why we announced £200 million in lockdown business grants. If you compare that to what's being spent in England, the sum is £1 billion per month in grants for businesses that are forced to close. So the package in Wales, 200 million compared to 1 billion in England, it's hugely, hugely generous compared to the English model. Now, in addition to that, you're right, we opened up the application process for development grants, and the demand was quite phenomenal. The demand was enormous, almost 6,000 applications within 36 hours. Now, we could have continued with the application portal being open to applications. The problem then is that you create expectation only to disappoint a vast number of applicants. Also, the pause is designed for us to then turn our attention towards actually scrutinizing, interrogating, and evaluating those applications that have come in to date. And it would appear that one of the reasons why there were so many applications was because some businesses were applying for emergency cash, and in so doing, didn't provide the documents that were required, didn't meet the criteria, even though it was very clear what the criteria and what the purpose of the fund was. And so there will be a pretty significant rejection rate. Now, it may well then result in surplus money being made available. That's why we thought pausing it was the most sensible thing to do. But I've just announced today, that we've got £300 million for a fourth phase of the Economic Resilience Fund. I want to make sure that that fund gives those businesses that were ready with their applications that weren't able to submit them in time a second chance to be able to invest in the long-term future of their businesses. So what we're looking at doing, and I'll update businesses through Business Wales within the coming fortnight or so, we're looking at opening up a registration system for businesses to be able to submit expressions of interest for that fourth phase of business, recognising that there is still great demand for development grants.
Okay,
Adrian,
thank
how
you.
Do you feel about that response? Adrian, is that...
It's welcomed, you know, that that there's going to be further phases coming in. You know, for me, Christmas is coming fast, and that's a huge part in the hospitality industry and shops in general. So we're going to miss that. And sometimes, you know, you make a loss in October, November, because you make a lot of money in December, and then you make a loss in January, February. So I think we'll miss that window. So is there more? Have you got more of a time frame for that? And is the actual phase three stopped, or is it suspended and will reopen?
Okay, Adrian, let me just be clear again. There are two parts to phase three. The £200 million lockdown grants are still available. It's fully open. So please, if you haven't already done so, just submit your details. Make sure they're up to date. You'll get the payments.
Can I just say I'm talking about the business one.
The
so
business
it's the,
development.
The £100 million business development.
That's paused. That's paused whilst we assess those applications that come in that have come in so far. But, you know, given that the fourth phase of the Economic Resilience Fund is designed to cover the first quarter of 2021, which is only how many weeks away now? Eight or so weeks away now, you know, there is barely any time between now and the point at which we'd need to be considering applications for that. Bearing in mind these are development grants, they are not emergency cash grants, so there is slightly more time. But we've paused it, but with a view of utilising ERF Phase 4 to help businesses that need development grants make sure that they future-proof their operations. And you know, I'd just say, as well, the reason that I was such a strong supporter of taking action with the firebreak when we did was because I feared if we didn't, we'd end up with a 4-week lockdown closer to Christmas, which would devastate hospitality and retail. And secondly, I thought it's absolutely vital that we kept it to a minimum, 2 weeks or 17 days is the absolute minimum that a successful fire break can operate, a circuit break can operate. And that's, again, was why I was keen to take action when we did. I know we came under a lot of criticism for it from those who have now just implemented a four-week lockdown, but I thought it was the right thing to do. And you know, I can also see that there are really important issues being raised in the chat bar, including Adrian Webb, the chair of the Ministerial Advisory Board, who also has done incredible work. And he asks about R&D and innovation, because we don't talk about that enough, I don't think. And the UK government's outlined an R&D roadmap that will see investment rise to more than £22 billion a year. We want to make sure that we get as much of that as we possibly can for Wales.
I think, Minister, that's a topic for another Rethinking Wales session early in the new year. First of all, I want to move to Ermina next, please, because we know from these conversations and others that we've been having, obviously, that businesses come in all sorts of different shapes and sizes. Not everybody wants to grow their business, but many businesses help others to grow, like Ermina's. So, Ermina, tell us how things are for you and what your concerns are, please. You're on mute. You just need to unmute yourself. It's okay. Everybody does it.
Apologies.
Absolutely fine.
So I'm a sole trader with no aspirations to expand my business and have more employees. I often feel neglected and undervalued because of this, even though I pay taxes and contribute to society. Business Wales and other organisations don't really cater to micro businesses like mine. What are you going to do so others like me don't slip through the cracks and miss out on opportunities, skills and support?
Okay, thanks, Ermina. Well, Business Wales most certainly does cater for you. If you haven't already signed up to Business Wales, please do, because it was designed to assist micro businesses, small and medium sized enterprises with advice, guidance and steering to financial support. Likewise, the Development Bank of Wales. I don't know whether you've taken a look at how the Development Bank of Wales may be able to assist you. But actually, the question that I have is, why wouldn't you want to grow? Because we need more Welsh-based businesses to grow and expand in a sustainable way in order to provide employment for many in Wales. And if every single business in Wales just took on one more person, we would reduce unemployment by, well, actually, you would eliminate unemployment in Wales, just if every business took one more person on. So I want to encourage people who may be reluctant to grow and expand to do so in a safe way, to have the confidence to be able to grow and expand. But in the meantime, and during the course of the pandemic, we have been able to support sole traders. And in this latest stage of the Economic Resilience Fund, as an example, there is discretionary funding available to local authorities to be able to support sole traders who don't pay business rates. You know, that discretionary fund has proven to be incredibly important so far, and many more grants are going to be issued. But please, Ermina, if you haven't registered with Business Wales, do so. Use once it's a little bit quieter. I know that they're under incredible pressure at the moment. But please do use the advice and expertise that they've got, because they can support you.
Okay. Well, I'd like to say that I have accessed Business Wales, and I was told very clearly that unless I answered in a certain way, then I wouldn't be supported. So therefore, that makes the choice very difficult for me, whether I lie or whether I tell the truth. And actually, becoming freelance is a very, very hard and kind of scary step to take. So actually, I'm in my third year of being a freelancer, and it is only now that I am able to sort of get the fees that I want to charge and work on projects that I want to do. So at the moment, for me, it's very much about surviving. I'm not thinking about taking on another person, because okay, I want to be able to live doing the work that I want to do. I know that people in Cardiff who are very much like me didn't get chance to access that funding because it was kind of closed within about 55 minutes. I'm one of the lucky ones, really, because I'm not in the arts kind of industry, and it's those people that are suffering even more because you're not getting to them. So what can you do for people like me, but also people that maybe don't come in your channels that often?
Okay, so a couple of things here. We did launch the Freelance Fund, two phases of the Freelance Fund. We launched that just as major demonstrations were taking place at Whitehall, musical demonstrations by creative artists, because of a lack of support on a UK basis. We would like to see more support on a UK-wide basis for freelancers, particularly for those in the arts and culture who have suffered so much, because the arts and culture sector went into the pandemic first, and you know, let's face it, many parts of that area of the economy are going to struggle to come out of it before the spring of next year, before we have a vaccine that's routinely available. But we also launched a startup fund, which has supported 1,600 startups. That's proven to be incredibly important. 1,600 people who started their businesses at a time when UK government support schemes were not able to support them. So we intervened there. But all of these funds, all of the demand for these funds only go to show just how disruptive coronavirus has been and why a UK-wide approach is absolutely vital whenever and wherever possible. And I'd just say one final thing about support from UK government. You know, I really welcome today's announcement regarding the extension of the JRS. I think that's going to be hugely important to businesses and to working people. But the greatest risk to the economy is in doing too little, too late. And the government should not fear major interventions. After World War II, borrowing was about 250% of GDP. It's likely that it's going to be between 120 and 130% when we're through coronavirus. So there is headroom to borrow more, enable to intervene more, to keep jobs, to keep businesses. And I'd urge UK government to do just that. You know, we're doing what we can with the most generous package of support for businesses, but it's really important that we work collectively across the UK as governments to do what we can for people like yourself, Amina, and for the wider economy.
I'm very conscious of time. Thank you both. We're going to come to James next, totally different part of the country, totally different sector. James, you're in the marine sector in shellfish aquaculture. You've got the double whammy of Brexit as well, staring you straight in the face. Talk us through your issues, please, for the Minister.
Okay, look, thank you. I guess my question is going to be a bit different in the sense that it's sort of, there's a focus on COVID and Brexit, but I mean, there are deeper structural and internal issues that I want to sort of draw out. So both of those represent huge challenges to our business. You know, we're a highly environmentally sustainable and evidence-based business. However, there's little demand in the UK for the seafood we produce. So our marketplace is the EU. And so in the future, our ability to access that marketplace is going to be at the very least more expensive. But it's also going to be a lot more uncertain and a lot more time consuming too. Nevertheless, there remains a huge potential in our field and also in the wider marine sector to substantially and sustainably produce economic activity that helps to rebuild the Welsh economy in the post-COVID world. However, you know, our long-term challenge has been not these externalities, but with Welsh government. And when we've sought to expand our business in line with Welsh Government policy, might I add, we've been faced with approaches by officials which kind of don't allow us to meet those policy objectives. And we've had applications pending for new sites in process for in excess of 10 years and basically getting nowhere. So my question to the Minister really is whether the Welsh Government will take the opportunity presented by the COVID and Brexit reset to change the culture inside of government from one that looks for reasons to endlessly prevaricate on making decisions, which has been our absolute experience, to one that actively seeks to enable and support the delivery of its own policy objectives.
Well, thanks, James. I'm afraid I don't actually recognise what you're saying. You know, I think it's a general sweeping statement that you're making about the Welsh Government civil service. And without knowing the details and specifics of the challenges that you faced individually, I wouldn't be able to comment on them. But what I would say is a very similar business, Mourne Shellfish, you may be aware of them. They were recently...
I'm actually a partner in Mourne Shellfish.
Right,
so,
well...
So we have benefited from your economic absolutely. Resilience fund, and I appreciate that. But we're talking about different ends of the scale.
But James, not just the Economic Resilience Fund. As an enabling government, we want to make sure that we can grow small businesses, micro businesses. And Mourne Shellfish were one of the recipients of the Foundational Economy Challenge Fund. This is an enabling fund. And as a result of that, you know, we're trying to directly address the challenges that businesses like yours face in a lack of custom from within the UK. And that, you know, that challenge fund's success from Mourne Shellfish, I think will make a very big difference. And that demonstrates how we want to be an empowering government. But without the details, I'd need to look at the details of what challenges you face, and I'll happily do that. But, you know, from my experience of being in government, I only work with officials who are desperately keen to support business growth and development and want to do all that they can to reduce the burden of administration and red tape for you.
I'm conscious I need to give Sally some time as well, and time is ticking on. Sally, let me come to you next, please. I know you're particularly concerned about business rates coming up in March.
I am, thank you, Oriel. We're all understandably and rightly focused on the here and now, COVID and Brexit in January, but I want to talk about what's happening from next April onwards, which does feel like a long time away, but it's actually very close. So in terms of background for everyone, in 2016, the revaluation of the rateable value of commercial properties meant that business rates bills for many businesses across Wales, especially on our high streets, were set to increase dramatically. The proposed increases were so great that it would have put many firms out of business almost overnight and decimated many of our high streets. Colleagues and I lobbied the Welsh Government at the time to protect small businesses, especially retailers, from these massive increases. As a result, the high streets rate relief scheme was introduced and the increases were staged over 4 years instead of all at once. The Welsh Government also promised that the business rates system would be overhauled, as everyone recognises that it's an outdated taxation model which is not fit for the 21st century. So fast forward 4 years and we've been hit with the effects of an economic downturn, COVID and Brexit. The high street rate relief scheme is due to end in March, so the full impact of the increases in business rates will be felt in April, just when we can at least afford it. So there should have been another revaluation this summer, ready for a new set of rateable values to be applied from April. Rateable values are broadly based on rents, and we know that rents have been declining over the last couple of years. So it was widely expected that there would be a sharp decline in the rateable values of many businesses across Wales, which would particularly benefit the high street by lowering their business rates bills next year. But unfortunately, the Welsh Government has cancelled the revaluation. A new revaluation will not now begin until April 2021, with the results only changing business rates in 2023 onwards. So this means excessive levels of business rates will be charged for another 2 years, just at a time when our high street retailers are already really struggling. So my question is, will the Welsh Government accept the recommendations of professional bodies and business organisations to continue the high street rate relief for the next 2 years at the level originally set for this year and reduce the multiplier from 52p in the pound to 30 to 35? And will they commit to overhauling the business rates system by replacing it with a land value tax in order to level the playing field and ensure that our high street retailers survive, not just in the short term, but also in the longer term?
Well, there's lots of questions there, Sally. And you know, I'd say first and foremost, in terms of land value tax, I think there's huge merit in that. I'm very attracted to that form of taxation. You'll be aware of the challenges that we faced as a government in terms of the uncertain financial outlook that has arisen as a consequence of delays to the CSR, the fact that there's only a single year budget and so forth, which has necessitated the actions that my colleague, Finance Minister Rebecca Evans, has taken. But of course, she's keen to learn from professional bodies, from people like yourself, in regards to the future of business rates. If it helps, I can arrange a meeting for yourself with the finance minister and with her officials. I'll certainly put that request in if you agree to it. But I would hope that it would also be recognised that when we are faced with calls for changes to be made, we respond in a compassionate and understanding way, which we did when you campaigned so effectively.
We have reached 3 o'clock. Minister, I don't know if you have to disappear quickly or if you're able to stay with us a little bit longer. Does your diary allow?
I'm going to just let things roll on and delay them. I do have another meeting starting at 3, but I will go into
that
late.
Thank you for staying. I'm conscious we haven't had any questions from people in the room, and we've got a lot here. We'd like to gather some of those together and share them with your team, and also with the economic policy email that will pop into the chat now as well, please, Andy. We've got a question around... I want to pick up a question first from Ed Evans around the importance of SMEs to the Welsh Foundation economy, but the visibility of work and the ease of bidding, particularly procurement issues and prompt payment, are essential for their survival and growth. His question is that is the public sector really supportive of that? Because it still doesn't feel that way.
Yeah, right at the outset of this pandemic, I remember in a press conference saying that prompt payment had to be made, not just from businesses, but also by the public sector. So, you know, I recognise the significance of the points being raised by the questioner, and we're putting pressure on organisations in the public and the private sector to make sure that SMEs are supported in the way that it's been outlined.
We've got a question from Nicholas Webb. Welsh Government has stated its ambition to have 30% of the workforce working remotely, even after COVID. It's an exciting proposal as far as Nick's concerned, but how can Wales switch to such a model and still retain the advantages of agglomeration economics, bringing talented people together to spark innovative thinking? We all know how little spontaneity there is in arranged Zoom calls.
And also, actually, you know, in terms of mental health, emotional health, it's vitally important that we have access to colleagues, particularly for those people who work in contact call centres, for example. But look, what we're saying is that we're setting an ambitious target of 30% remote working. And I place the emphasis on remote working. What I'd like to see us develop is a network of remote working hubs that contribute to the vibrancy of high streets and town centres, that contribute to the foundational economy and communities across Wales, and where we create opportunities for multi-place working. And that's the term I prefer personally to use in this agenda, multi-place working, where it allows you to perhaps one day work from home, another day work from a remote working hub, and another day then go into the headquarters, and to generate that sort of creative discussion that is so important to businesses and to organisations in the public sector, where you have many people working. On the point of agglomeration, well, we've used the argument of agglomeration to grow the most intensely urban areas of the UK. And, you know, this is an argument that goes beyond the UK, that you have to invest in cities. You've got to grow cities to create agglomeration. But in many instances, that's left satellite towns to fall into a state of, in many cases, I'm afraid, terrible disrepair and neglect, and it's made many people then resent economic growth, and that's what resulted, in my view, in no small part, in the decision by the British public to leave the European Union. We have to make sure that economic growth applies more equally across our communities, and that's what I think the multi-place working agenda can contribute to most.
Thank you. A question from Craig Johnson, picking up on issues around place-based approaches. I mean, I think just to respond to your multi-place working thing, there will be issues there around the fabric that enables people to work in different places. And I think particularly from a gender perspective and who's carrying the predominance and responsibility for childcare in particular, I think that's something to be thought through. Key part of place-based approaches and decarbonisation to support good public transport infrastructure, another part of your portfolio. We've seen what's been happening with the railways in Wales. That's really hard to say at this time of day. In spite of coronavirus, does the Welsh Government's commitment to the South Wales Metro and North Wales Metro remain as strong, as well as bus and rail connections between places, when people just don't want to travel, can't travel, yeah, and have no reason to travel absolutely in the same way as they did?
No, absolutely. And also the South West Wales Metro as well, the Swansea Bay Metro. I'm more committed to all of those projects than I have ever been, because they contribute to the social justice agenda quite incredibly. More than a fifth of people in Wales have no access to a private vehicle. More than a fifth of people cannot afford a private vehicle. Without public transport, they are locked out of employment. They are locked out of the ability to access services and goods. And that is a social justice issue as far as I'm concerned. So we are fully committed to progressing the metro programmes and to reforming public transport, particularly in terms of bus services. I've also seen, I think it's a really important question that I need to address actually in the chat bar regarding the future of Business Wales, given that it's supported by European funding. One of the reasons why we've been so insistent on UK government to make the pledge that we will get every penny of replacement EU funding is because we can't have a cliff edge in terms of the support that's offered by vital organisations like Business Wales. So we need the certainty of future funding in order to maintain programmes like Business Wales. But given the importance of Business Wales in growing businesses to a record number, you know, I remain completely committed to maintaining that service in the years to come.
Thank you. Just picking up on your point about social justice, there was a question earlier on this afternoon about both the advisory group, and I think I'd like to apply it also to Fenix, in terms of the gender and balance of Black, Asian and minority ethnic voices and experiences within both those groups. Because if you're hearing the voices and experience of predominantly white, middle class, possibly male people, where are the opportunities for those other voices to come in? Some of the conversations we're having are that people from Black, Asian, minority ethnic groups are only being consulted on things to do with race and diversity issues, not on issues to do with the environment and not on issues to do with the economy. What further measures do you need to put in place, or are you thinking of putting in place, to enable that to come through? That's the first point. The second point is issues around transport. One of the things that we did as part of our Re-energising Wales work was point out issues around the decarbonisation of transport too, and the essential importance of data when it comes to transport, and knowing how those trends are shifting and changing. So if you could do a little bit of an update, please, on what are you gathering and why are you gathering it and who's looking at it in terms of what that means for the future, that would be helpful.
Okay, I mean, these are two huge subjects. First of all, let's just accept that the political economy of Wales, like the rest of the UK, is too white, too male. We need to degenderize, if that's such a term, the political economy of Wales and the UK. That can only be done through a concerted effort to bring more people who are most marginalized into the political and economic systems that operate, not just people from BAME communities, but also young people as well, and disabled people, older people. And we all have a role in striving to do just that, not just government and government agencies, but organizations such as the IWA. I mean, you know, it's really important that organizations, not just those that are in receipt of public money, do generate strategies and policies to reach out to broaden the mix of participants that they have, and as part of the reconstruction and recovery vision that we'll be outlining in the coming weeks, there will be that strong focus on driving inclusive growth, and that was at the heart of the Economic Action Plan as well, driving inclusive growth and supporting the industries of tomorrow. And I've just glanced actually whilst you were asking your questions at a comment from Gary Thompson. You know, he's talking about onshoring. There are huge opportunities for onshoring of supply chains, shortening supply chains as a consequence of coronavirus. We're looking at how we can do it across multiple sectors. You need only take the food and drinks industry to recognize how important in a end of transition post-COVID environment, how important shortening supply chains in the food industry might be. Likewise, the automotive sector. And then go into your question about data. The reason that data is so important in terms of transport is because it informs us where and when and why people are using public transport and why they are not. And we're creating various models that then inform the sort of transport, public transport provision that needs to be developed for the future. And there are some really, really good pilot schemes that have been in operation. I'll give you just one as an example, the FlexiPass system in Newport, which has seen incredible rates of patronage. It's essentially a kind of a test Uberization of bus services in Newport, and that's been hugely successful. But it wouldn't have been able to be developed as it is without the ability to gather and scrutinize data. And we'll be using the data that's gathered as a consequence of it operating to then inform other services elsewhere in Wales.
So presumably, as Minister with responsibility for the railway, you will be looking to direct the new rail company to implement integrated ticketing and timetables with Transcumbria,
well,
and other bus companies.
Without a doubt.
That's the kind of thing
without
that
a
makes
doubt.
That flexibility possible.
I mean, this was always our vision when we signed the contract with the operator and developer. We wanted integrated public transport. But what we announced with the essentially bringing railways into public ownership was the ability to accelerate that work of integrating ticketing and timetables, especially with us taking more control through the emergency management agreements for bus. bus services, taking more control over the provision of bus services. But also, I've got to say, the reason why I was so keen to retain the expertise and experience of particularly Keolis was because they are masters at integrated ticketing and integrated timetables. They are the world's best. And so the joint venture that TfW have been negotiating with Keolis will contribute to the integration of ticketing and the integration of timetables and routes.
We are out of time, I think, everybody. There are a couple of questions that have been submitted to us prior to the event by email. One particularly around the delivery of policies at pace and what needs to happen in your area of responsibility while still complying with future generations. There's another one around the future of the independent TV production sector within Wales. We'll share these with your team. How COVID has decimated the freelance sector, we've referred to that already, but is building in resilience, build business resilience for these workers in particular, a priority for overall when rethinking Wales? And there's a specific question in relation to business rates following on from Sally's point in more detail. Okay. I would just like to ask you, Minister, if I may, what are you taking away from today's conversations? Because my takeaways are some great intentions, Still some work to do, both in terms of delivery, implementation, and the removal of the bureaucratic impediments to people accessing the fund that is available, but also the communications, the pressure and the pace of communication, the pressure needs to be put on the comms teams to up their game still, and to do the cross-sector coordination. So that's the main takeaways for me at the moment. What are your takeaways?
Two things mainly, and these cover, I think, largely what's been discussed by everybody: communications, collaboration. And through collaboration, you get co-production. You get the right policies implemented that benefit all. And in terms of communications, we knew from the outset of some of the lockdown measures, based on lessons learned from Leicester and from other cities, that you have to have crystal clear communications. That can be incredibly difficult in a world where there is a plethora of social media channels and where we are being bombarded with different messages constantly throughout the day. But having a strong communications team, having crystal clear communications, is vitally important. And two-way communications as well. Communications between business, government, between business organizations and their members. Communications between the third sector, government, third sector and businesses. And I think that's something for something relationship that we've been nurturing between government and business can only grow stronger.
I think it needs to be, thank you for that, I think it needs to be more web-like, not necessarily all centrally and out again. So that's something that we'll be looking at in detail. I'd very much like to thank our panellists and speakers for giving us their time today and for carrying on past my 3 o'clock deadline. Ken Skates, Minister for Economy, Transport and North Wales, thank you very much. Chris Knott, Adrian Emmett, Charles Dark, Edmina Redzepovic, James Wilson and Sally Stevenson. This is the 10th in our series of Rethinking Wales. Thank you very much to everybody else for joining us. Our next one will be on the 26th of November. If you want to receive early notifications of future IWO events and the next edition of the Welsh Agenda, which is going to print as I speak, with a particular focus on Black, Asian, minority ethnic contributions to public policy in Wales, you'll be pleased to hear. Do please join us as a member at iwa.wales, about us, support us. While you're welcome to leave the conversation now, we will leave the chat room open for a little while the speakers join us separately. Thank you again for taking part and really hope you can join us for the next discussion in a fortnight's time. Dioch an fawr.
Thanks very much, everyone. Take care. Thanks.